So on Monday, Marcel, news breaks out of nowhere that the Dolphins have just fired their head coach, Brian Flores. This was supposed to be the first day of the offseason for you. So were you already like wearing swim trunks when your world blew up? What was that even like?
Well, you know, I got a nice view from my bedroom. I can see, you know, the western part of Miami, big skyline. I see the hammock outside, and I was thinking, man, I think I'm going to spend some time out there today.
Marcel Louis-Jacques covers the Miami Dolphins for ESPN.
And then, you know, the word from Schefter came in.
We got a lot of breaking news. There's a lot of things going on across the league. We knew it would be a busy morning. The big surprise of the morning is in Miami, where the Miami Dolphins have fired their head coach, Brian Flores.
Wow.
Parted ways with him, let go of him. A little bit of a surprise coming off a big win over the New England Patriots.
It's one of those, like, I love reporting moments. Obviously, I'm not excited for anybody to lose their job, but that, like, moment of excitement when, you know, like, something major just happened and you have to, like, you have to cover it. I know I need to get a new story out. I needed to come out with a reaction. I need to make a couple calls to whatever sources I can to just get anything on background. I had an unnamed editor who essentially called me just to say, man, that sucks. Have a good rest of the day. I was like, I kind of appreciate that, right? Like, I kind of appreciate that. But yeah, you know, pulled my laptop onto my desk and then just got to work.
Marcel Louis-Jacques was far from the only person whose plans exploded once the Miami Dolphins made a move that left the rest of the sports world pretty dumbfounded, hinting at an even bigger mess behind the scenes. So today, we ask Marcel exactly what he's learned since, about why Brian Flores really got fired, what quarterback Tua Tagovailoa had to do with any of this, and what happens next. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, January 13th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Marcel, I don't think we've had you back on the show since you experienced what I believe to be the biggest temperature change in the history of beat reporting, moving from Buffalo and the Bills down south to Miami and the Dolphins. And we bring you on now because I desperately need you to make sense of why Brian Flores is no longer the head coach of this team. This is something that shocked me. It shocked seemingly the rest of the NFL as well, because this was a team as of Sunday, man, that seemed to have just hit like the optimistic, healthy part of the football EKG chart. And we'll get into all the ups and downs in a second. But just to start, what was your initial reaction to the Dolphins firing Flores?
I mean, this is a family-friendly podcast, right? I don't think I can actually say what I said, but I think we can imagine. You can imagine the term. I was surprised. I wasn't expecting it, man. I thought he was going to enter next season with probably the hottest seat in the NFL. It'd be hot, but it would still be his seat. I mean, shoot, man. The last time we ever talked to him, what's going to be the last time we ever talked to him, nobody asked him about his job security.
So describe that. You were there after this final regular season game on Sunday. What was the scene like? What was the mood like? Was there any clue that this might have been in the offing?
No, I don't think so. If he saw it coming, then he's a pretty good actor because he did not let it on much. The team was elated. I mean, they intercepted a lateral for a touchdown to end the game, end the season.
Touchdown. There you
touchdown,
go.
Miami. And Guavin intercepted the pitch in the end zone.
That's the way you finish it up right there, huh? A little celebration in the end zone.
33-24, the final score.
It was this, like, picturesque Hollywood moment where the sideline spills into the end zone and players are just elated and running off the field and happy that they were able to finish their season so strong. We asked Brian, like, man, how does it feel to sweep Bill Belichick? How does it feel to have the best record against Bill of any coach in his Patriots era? Do you take pride in where your team was able to finish? Like, how do you reflect on the season? Are you confident going into next season because of how you ended this one, that you can, with some tweaking in the offseason, really compete.
Well, and beating the guy that was his former boss.
Yeah.
Like, he is from the Belichick coaching tree, of course.
Yeah, I mean, no, there were no questions, man. I went back and I read the transcript two or three times to be sure. There was no question of, like, are you going to be back here next season? Like, do you expect to be back here next season? I think we could all be convinced that it needed to happen. I think that the hangup is more on Greer staying than Flores being fired. But either way, man, it's just not really something I expected to be covering this year.
Yeah, so Chris Greer, that is the general manager of the Dolphins, the guy who got retained while Brian Flores did not. And so there is a mess here that I do want to unpack with you here, Barcel, because the story of the Dolphins season, I mean, let's be honest, it got overshadowed by all of the other messes in the NFL this year. And so you down in South Florida, like, for people who missed all of it, how would you summarize that roller coaster ride? How would you summarize this 2021 season in Miami?
There were just so many ups and downs, man. Like, let's start high. You start at the beginning of the season. You're coming off a 10-6 year. You beat the Patriots in Foxborough. Like, Tua doesn't look great, but, you know, he does enough. There's that 1 week moment where the Dolphins stood alone in first place in the AFC East.
That's right.
And
that's right.
That was about as high as it got this season. Tua goes down second series in week two. You lose your starting quarterback and you lose seven games in a row. It just kept getting, like, lower and lower and lower. And then they started winning. At first, it's like, okay, it's the Texans. But then they beat the Ravens, and then they beat the Jets, and then the wins just kept coming and kept looking more and more dominant. Then you win seven straight, and all of a sudden, like, you're actually a wild card team. You're the seventh seed entering that Week 17 game against the Titans in Nashville. And then Ryan Tannehill, the Titans quarterback, takes a 34-3 size needle and just demolishes it.
Play fake, Tannehill rolling to the right, throwing downfield, touchdown Titans!
So the final score, the Tennessee Titans 34, the Miami Dolphins 3. They fall to 8-8, and the Dolphins go home highly disappointed.
They're knocked out of playoff contention, and it just felt like all the momentum was just deflated completely. And I'm really impressed by this team's ability to come out and look like it did against New England. But the drama was almost nonstop. You're just constantly on your toes this year.
I do want to just, like, tip my cap, I suppose, to Brian Flores, because in all of this, even though it ended with that needle bursting the balloon, you know, seven wins in a row is pretty notable for any team, especially a team that has, like, a tremendous dearth on the offensive line. But in terms of Brian Flores and his tenure as a whole, how would you adjudicate that? How do you describe his three seasons overall as a coach is concerned?
From a coaching standpoint, strictly, I don't think he got enough time. And I can say that with confidence. This regime did not give him enough time to really develop. He came in here, he took over a roster that was literally signing players off the street and putting them in the game. Guys didn't know each other's name in the huddle. One of the reporters here told me a story about the locker room in 2019 when, of course, I was in Buffalo. He said players in 2019 would pull him aside and point to a guy and say, "Hey, who is that?" This roster was nothing. He went 5-11 with that team. Overachieved a little bit again in 2020. Kind of choked away with the playoffs on the line in week 17. They were winning in and got blown out at Buffalo. I guess where you can fault him as a football coach is you just didn't see that next step here in year three. You didn't see them build off of the 2020 season. I guess ultimately it wasn't enough to dissuade Stephen Ross from letting him go for reasons off the field as well.
Yeah, so let's get into Stephen Ross here, because the billionaire owner of the Miami Dolphins has this coach who goes 5-11 when they're expected to be the worst team in the NFL, and then 10-6, exceeding expectations, then 9-8 this season, as you've just chronicled for us. So why did he decide ultimately, as you best understand it now, to fire Brian Flores?
You know what's wild is when we spoke to him Monday, he didn't mention anything football specific one time.
Mm.
I asked him point blank too. I said, you know, you've called your roster full of exceptional young talent. What more could this team have accomplished as currently constructed? And he didn't touch football. He didn't touch offense, defense, anything on the field. He went immediately into, well, you know, I don't feel like we are collaborating at a level high enough to sustain success in the NFL.
An organization can only function if it's collaborative and it works well together. And I don't think that we were really working well as an organization that it would take to really win consistently at the NFL level.
It's my understanding that, you know, Ross's comments are stemming from Brian Flores, you know, kind of stopped communicating. Really, he stopped communicating with his staff somewhere around really Thanksgiving. And, you know, even about things like, you know, daily meeting plans. Like, it's my understanding that some of, at least, his assistants felt like they just didn't know what was going on in his head. They didn't know what he was thinking. They didn't know what his plan was.
Wow.
And the incredible thing is that, like, it continued through the winning streak. So they finished 8-1 as he's not talking to people. You know, that's communication. And then collaboration, he and Chris Greer's relationship was, we can call it bad, we can call it non-existent. Both of these would be true. Like, they do not have a good relationship right now. But this came from him not having a good relationship with Chris Greer, and Stephen Ross is Team Greer. You know, if one guy had to go, it was going to be Flo, hands down.
But Marcel, I do want to try and drill down a little further here on maybe like the center of the Venn diagram between all of that human relations dysfunction and the actual on-the-field football decisions that were made. Where does Tua Tagovailoa fit into all of this equation as, you know, the once-in-future starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins?
Yeah, you know, that was the first question that Stephen Ross was asked.
Stephen, I'd like to ask you what role, if any, the quarterback position played in this decision?
Let me be clear. It played no role in it at all. I have a lot of confidence in Tua. I watched him grow. I think he's a fine young man.
You know, obviously, I think we've all heard the rumors, the Brian Flores wanted Justin Herbert, but Chris Greer wanted Tua.
Right. This was in the 2020 draft, specifically when Justin Herbert got drafted by the Chargers immediately after Tua got taken by the Dolphins. And now we have these reports out there saying that Flores actually wanted Herbert instead of Tagovailoa.
I've had people who I trust tell me that. But at the same time, based on what I know about Chris Greer from being around this franchise and covering this franchise, he is not the type of person to bogart what he wants. You know, he's not going to just push his way over his head coach. The only way that I could see that happening is if Stephen Ross said he wanted Tua. If the word came from the very top, this is our quarterback. That is the only way I could see him doing that against Brian Flores' wishes. And I guess, like, it would kind of make sense. Like, it would kind of fit into the narrative, right? Considering where we currently are with Chris Greer and Stephen Ross on one side and Brian Flores, I mean, on the outside right now. I could see that leading to the deterioration of those relationships. But I can't definitively say that Brian Flores wanted Justin Herbert over Tua Tagovailoa.
But just in terms of that power dynamic, Marcel, to be very clear here, it sounds like you're saying that Brian Flores wasn't very good at managing up or down, but Chris Greer has always been excellent and very savvy at managing upwards.
Exactly. You know, he's good at playing the game within the game, if that makes sense. Greer he's been part of this organization since 2002. That's about, a dozen head coaches and regimes, a couple different owners. There's a reason why.
20 years.
Yeah, there's a reason why he keeps coming back. He is a survivor. Chris Greer is a survivor. He will do what it takes to survive. Ben Solak from The Ringer wrote an entire article about this. I think he nailed it, that Flores was fired because he was not good at playing the other game. He's good at the football side. He's not good at the bureaucratic side.
And it felt, Marcel, like we got our first taste of that dysfunction from the outside looking in when those rumors all started emerging before the trade deadline about this possible deal that would have sent Deshaun Watson from the Texans to Miami.
Houston Chronicle is now reporting that the Texans and Dolphins could have a deal for Deshaun Watson done this week. We're going to bring back Adam Schefter. And Schefter, we've been talking about this story and specifically these two teams.
Now, obviously, this never happened, but how do you remember Brian Flores being involved in that whole discourse?
It's my understanding that the Deshaun Watson talk was driven by Brian Flores. You know, I don't want to officially confirm that. That is just how I understand the situation. And obviously, he took a bulk of the questions about it before the trade deadline.
Tua's our quarterback, and I'm not getting into speculation. I'm not getting into rumors. I'm not getting into rumor speculation, distractions. I'm focused on our team, focused on our quarterback, and that's Tua.
I think it was a point of kind of frustration for him. I don't think he enjoyed being asked those questions over and over and over again.
I don't really get into rumors. I don't really pay attention to rumors and hypotheticals and this and that. Tua is our quarterback. I've said that, you know, multiple times, and I've said that to him, and it's about as I try to be, you know, honest and transparent with our players, and, you know, that's what I've been.
He did stand behind Tua whenever the question arose. It wasn't necessarily glowing support. He didn't, you know, gush over Tua and really hammer his point home. It was always simple. Tua's our quarterback. I believe in Tua. And then Tua hit us with probably the quote of the season before the trade deadline when he was asked if he feels wanted.
Do you feel wanted in this organization?
I don't not feel wanted. That's what I could say.
Yeah, the double negative is never a real good sign that you feel wanted.
Never, right? You know, according to him, he and Flores had, you know, constant communication and they were always on the same page and so on and so forth. But it did feel so uncomfortable.
But as communicating with the public goes, Marcel, let alone like behind the scenes, it feels like it's very different to say, okay, Tua is our quarterback right now versus Tua is our quarterback, period. And it's also another thing to say, Deshaun Watson, hey, we're not interested in him at all, which is very notably something that Brian Flores and Chris Greer never said, right? They never offered anything approaching that kind of clarity on this situation.
That is correct. I gotta say, football players, they're human too. And it is hard to block out that much noise, man. It is hard, especially when your GM does come out the day after the deadline and basically confirm that, yeah, we did some background on Deshaun Watson. Like, I can promise you, the Bengals didn't do background on Deshaun Watson. The Chargers didn't do background on Deshaun Watson. You know, neither did the Bills or the Ravens,
yep,
or any
guys
team with a
young
quarterback.
Franchise-level quarterbacks. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, like nobody's doing that. I think it was really poorly handled by the organization, and I understand that how rumors work. You know, they sometimes can get out of control, but I felt like both Chris Greer and Brian Flores really could have gotten out in front of these rumors. It could have been so easy, man. There was 1,000 opportunities for them to shut that thing down, to say out loud, we're not interested in trading for Deshaun Watson. Like, we are not interested in making a trade. You could see the change in Tua's demeanor after the deadline passed. There was definitely a sense of relief there. There was a sense of comfort that he's going to have the room to play freely and to make his mistakes and learn from them. We saw him play a lot more efficiently than he had been when healthy in the first half of the season.
After the break, we need to talk about Tua.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So I need you to help me understand, Marcel, what all of this means now for the future of Tua Tagovailoa, who I consider one of the most fascinating figures in all of sports at the current moment, because this is the would-be franchise quarterback the Dolphins took fifth overall in 2020. He's the guy who's now played in 23 NFL games. He's attempted almost 700 passes as a professional, and he has become, by the way, this cult figure in Miami. And by that I refer to, of course, his actual cult. So how do you begin to explain what Tuanon is? And how do you begin to sort of deal with that fervent, rabid base of pretty unhinged support that Tua has somehow benefited from as all of this has been happening?
Unhinged support. Don't get me wrong. I've had my back and forths with Tuanon before. It'll get you nowhere. But at the same time, I get where they're coming from, man. Like, Dolphins fans, they've seen a lot of bad quarterback play here. They saw Wash, Jay Cutler. They've seen Matt Moore. They've seen Chad Henne. They've seen Chad Pennington. They have seen Cleo Lemon. Like, they've seen a bunch of probably other quarterbacks who I just don't know that they had to suffer through that I wasn't here to cover. And so there's a set, like, special section of that group who, okay, we took a first-round quarterback now. Like, this is supposed to be the savior. He's a nice guy. He's a likable person. They're going to do whatever they can to protect him and defend him. If he completes a pass beyond 45 yards, I can almost guarantee there's going to be about 72 people in your replies, in your mentions, with a clip of it saying, I thought he couldn't throw far. And
yes, alleging, Marcel, that you specifically are part of the conspiracy against their savior. That is right.
Exactly. So, like, it's y'all learn not to take it personally to an extent. You know, Twitter is where nuance goes to die. So I try to avoid Tuanon whenever I can.
But hold on, though, because give me your nuanced take on how much to a stock it is reasonable to hold right now. Are you a buyer? Are you a seller? Where are you on it?
So I actually came out and wrote a story about what do the Dolphins do with Tua this offseason. I spoke to a lot of smart people, you know, Mina Kimes, Jordan Reed, Dan Orlovsky, Louis Riddick, just to name a few, Matt Bowen. And everybody was pretty much on the same page in that he needs another year. He's done enough to deserve another year. But he needs to show up in big moments, and he needs to prove that he can elevate this offense on his own if he's ever called upon to do so. Then the Tennessee game happened, and I understand that it was cold. I understand that it was rainy, but one of those quarterbacks on the field that day completed, I think it was 12 of 18 passes for a couple touchdowns. The other one put the ball on the ground three times and nearly threw another two interceptions and did throw an actual interception. Mm. You know, so like both teams dealt with the same weather conditions, and one quarterback looked decisively worse when asked to throw the ball. And that left probably more sour of a taste in my mouth about Tua than it reasonably should have, especially because the next week you saw Justin Herbert go 99 yards to send a game into overtime. And you're like, wow. Like, I've never seen Tua do that.
That's tough for Tuanon, right? Like, if you're being measured against the guy who was taken directly after you in the draft, and that guy is the dude who we just saw make heroic, mythological throws over and over again for the Chargers, like, all season, yeah, that hurts.
It's hard, man. Like, that debate should be over. The Tua versus Justin Herbert debate should be over, because, like, you're not, no matter how much you compare the two, like, the Dolphins are never going to have Justin Herbert. Like, that's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the debate should be Tua versus the available options, you know? So, like, a Tua versus, like, Andy Dalton, I'd rather have Tua. Tua versus Jimmy Garoppolo, I think I'd rather have Tua, just because I think he'd be cheaper than you're going to get Garoppolo. Tua versus Tyrod Taylor or Teddy Bridgewater.
But you're putting him in that, you know, if there is the cathedral ceiling level franchise guy, there is the kind of rung below that, which is clearly, you know, game manager guy.
Yeah, no, NFL starter. Like, Tua's not a third round pick. He's not a undrafted free agent. He's not a sixth round guy or journeyman. Like, they took him number 5 overall, man. Like, the expectations for you are just a little higher.
So before we inadvertently end up dragging you to the depths of Tuanon hell here, Marcel, I want to turn back to Brian Flores, because beyond the quarterback stuff, the head coach question is such an enormous part of this story and the larger story that's now confronting the NFL, because without Brian Flores as a head coach in this league, the league is now down to 2 black head coaches. And one of them, David Culley of the Texans, may be on his way out as well now. This is after the league had 7 black coaches a decade ago. And I know there are a number of black candidates in the mix for the coaching vacancies that we have right now. But where do you see things landing here? How do you assess that picture? And how do you see this cycle resolving itself?
Well, I think that, first of all, first and foremost, Brian Flores is going to get a job in like 2 seconds. Right? Like, I think he is talented enough, and I think he's shown enough that another franchise is going to take a chance on him. And, you know, hopefully he can take some things that he learned from his tenure with the Dolphins and apply them in his next venture. But I mean, I think the Bears requested to interview him already. He's going to be coaching another team soon. I think we're also going to see Byron Leftwich, you know, return to the promised land in Duval County and take over the Jacksonville Jaguars. I would like to see, you know, Eric Bieniemy finally get his opportunity. I want to see guys get second chances, man. I want to see Todd Bowles get another chance. I might, maybe even Vance Joseph get another chance. I want to see Leslie Frazier get another chance. All he's done in Buffalo is coach one of the top 4 defense in the past several years. He lost an all-pro corner, and that defense hasn't skipped a beat this season. You know, he's getting his interviews with the Bears, which I'm really excited about that possibility for him. And I'm so glad he didn't take or get, you know, the job in Houston last year, which was the only one that I think he had interviewed for since he got to Buffalo.
Well, let's talk about that, Marcel, because quality of opportunity is essential to this conversation, right? Like, what kind of jobs that, say, a David Culley might get, you know, it signals something about the economy available to black head coaches. So what does seem most appealing to you in terms of the jobs that are out there right now versus the ones that appear to be dead ends?
Yeah, well, you know, jobs like the Texans one last year, where you've got a lot of salary to shed. And the one thing that would be attractive about that job wanted out at the time.
Yep.
You know, Deshaun Watson, this was before the allegations and the lawsuits came in. This was simply when he had requested a trade. That's the only thing. That's the only reason why anybody would want that job. Otherwise, it's devoid of talent. And so you're setting these coaches up for failure, and then they're being lambasted as poor coaches when they don't succeed. Like, when, you know, you ever heard that phrase? You know, they made you the captain of the ship and didn't tell you that the ship was sinking?
Yep.
Like, hey, you're made captain of a sinking ship and being blamed for it. Like, that's not fair. You know, and I think Jacksonville would ordinarily fall in that category, but I think that Byron Leftwich, not just being a former player, but being a former quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think is galvanizing. Like, I think that's a hand in glove fit that already has, and the difference between this Jags team and teams of the past, they've got Trevor Lawrence now. I think Chicago is a high quality job, man. Like, you've got a guy in Justin Fields. You've got a defense that's, you know, ready to compete already. You've got a rabid fan base as well that actively cares about the team. And I know that that's asking a lot sometimes, because teams aren't going to have head coaching vacancies if they're winning games per se.
Right.
Like, if they're in a good space. But, you know, there are varying degrees of bad. And I think Texans was right there at the bottom of the scale last year.
Yeah, all bad is definitely not created equal, Marcel. I agree. But hold on. After this last break, I need to ask you about what comes next with Miami's coaching vacancy and whether a certain milk-loving coach from a certain Big Ten school is actually in the running to take over.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So where are we, by the way, with the candidate that pretty much everybody seemed to immediately assume was the favorite to be the next head coach of the Dolphins, Jim Harbaugh? Like, is that still an active conversation? How should we understand that theory at this point?
Well, I'll say Stephen Ross came out against any Jim Harbaugh rumor harder than anyone in this organization came out against any Deshaun Watson rumor earlier in the year. You know, like, where was this level of response earlier right. in the season? But no, I'll joke aside. He did. He actually kind of chuckled a little bit. He kind of laughed when Harbaugh was brought up on Monday.
Your thoughts on Jim Harbaugh, and do you have a coach in mind as you made this move?
I have no coach in mind at this point. I love Jim Harbaugh. He's at the University of Michigan. That is my school I graduated from, and I'm very involved in it. And I'm not going to be the person who takes Jim Harbaugh for the University of Michigan. I hope he stays there. He is a great coach.
That is a strong stance to take. That's going to be hard to walk back from if you end up hiring Jim Harbaugh. So I would say that the chances are slim. Also, he is high profile enough of a college coach that to, you know, pluck him away from the college ranks, that cushy job up in Ann Arbor, you're going to have to sweeten the deal like a decent amount. You're going to have to pay him fat, first of all, and probably give him some personnel control, which contradicts you keeping Chris Greer on this staff. I would say it's pretty far odds. Odds makers sent their daily email blast out to the sports media world, and they had Brian Daboll listed as the favorite to land the Miami Dolphins job. And I think that's probably makes a lot of sense.
And that is a guy you know well, obviously, from your time covering the Bills, Barcel. What should Stephen Ross and Chris Greer keep in mind as they evaluate a candidate like Brian Daboll?
Yeah, that's my guy, man. He's I think that's that. Brian Daboll is maybe my favorite coach that I've ever covered, you know, assistant head or otherwise. Just a genuine person, man. I remember, you know, pulling him aside at the last practice I went to up in Buffalo and telling him that, hey, man, like, I'm going to be moving, like, I'm going down to Miami. And, you know, while most people, when you say something like that, their first response is going to be like, oh, man, that's awesome. Congrats. Like, all of this. I mean, he just had like this solemn look on his face and looked me in the eyes and said, is this something that you want to do? Mm. Like, is this a good move for you? Is this something that you like, that's going to help you in the long run? And I told him I thought so. And then that's when the congrats and the happiness came from. And I appreciated that response, man, because I'm just a reporter here. Like, if he's treating us like that, his relationships with his players have to be, I mean, unbreakable. I think that, you know, for a guy who's a product of the Bill Belichick, Nick Saban system, he is only Belichickian when the camera is on. You know, and I think he does it on purpose a little bit. He knows what he's doing. He's a smart guy. But, you know, off camera, he is as personable as they come. He's funny. He's engaging, I think. And he's smart. He's innovative. And he's gotten the opportunity to learn what does and doesn't work in the NFL. He's been around for a long time.
So wait a minute, Marcel. Now I'm curious if you have any personal advice to offer for one Brian Daboll about making the switch from Buffalo, New York to Miami, Florida.
Keep your coats, man. Keep your coats. Not because of, you know, they're going to get much use here, but you got to go to Buffalo, you got to go to New York, you got to go to Boston once a year. Like, eventually you're going to, don't throw them away. Don't make that mistake. And every now and then, when it's raining every single day in the summer, just go look at the coat and be like, you know, I could be having to wear that right now. Like, so let's count our blessings. I'm just kidding, Buffalo. You know, I love you guys. Don't tweet at me.
Marcel, thank you for risking your internet presence with us on ESPN Daily.
Yeah, no problem. I'm going to turn off notifications for the next week.
That would be wise. I'm at Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.